Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you. You have a friend.
Welcome, everyone, to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, Dean and founder of DirectionsU.com, calling to you live this week from Los Angeles, California, where I am attending the Speakers and Authors Networking Guild 3 with some great speakers and authors such as Jack Canfield and Jay Abraham and so many others. It's an event that's being hosted by my good friend Larry Binet, the Connector, and his partner Stephen Pearson Chet Holmes. So I'm looking forward to a really fun week this week while I'm out here networking. I'm staying in a castle. You can check it out at castleivar.com. I feel like Cinderella. So on today's show, I've got my co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady from ProfitableStorytelling.com, joining me. Rhonda, are you there?
I sure am, and calling from Branson, and hey, keep your shoes on, Cinderella.
I will do my best not to lose any of them, Miss Rhonda, while I am there. It's going to be so much fun.
Oh, I know, I'm staying at a castle. I looked at the pictures. Oh, my gosh, what a fabulous time you're going to have. Oh,
well, there will be pictures up on the blog all week as I go through this wonderful event, so check them out. There will be at askggg.com/wheresGina. Again, that's www.askggg.com/wheresGina. Should be a pretty big trip.
Yes, I'm sure that it will.
So Ms. Rhonda and I were just talking right before the show, and she tells me that she's got some guests, great guests, booked for the entire month of November, guys.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to work on getting some of these awesome authors that are out here to hook up with me for the show for December. And who knows, maybe in the next week, Ms. Rhonda, we can get all of our guests for the rest of the year lined up. Would that be cool or what?
Well, that would be cool. It's too bad I can't load up all the shows 2 months in advance, but that would be fabulous. I'm certainly wanting to get the rest of the year planned out as quickly as possible and just bringing some awesome, awesome people to you. And that is great. You are going to be with the cream of the crop out there. What fun.
I know it. So what do we got on board for today, Rhonda?
Well, today, you know, we don't have a guest today because there's sometimes it's great to have guests and we love them, of course. But sometimes it's really great to help bring our listeners to some really good understandings for your business. And we, a few weeks back, had started to talk about having your expert voice. And there's something else that just seems to be something that a lot of people don't quite get and really need to, and that is the whole concept of tribes, of having a tribe.
Well, we're going to do today's show a little bit differently, Rhonda.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of me just doing the talking, you and I are going to talk together about the concept. I very much want to hear as much from you as I hear from myself. Is that a deal?
That is perfect. I love it that way, so that's great.
Cool. So why don't you answer your own question? What is a tribe?
Well, I want to make a distinction between a tribe and a crowd.
There you go.
Okay? Because I think that will help people begin to get the concept about tribes. And some people think, well, a tribe is just a clump of people that maybe are in the same area or in the same group, whatever. And there is a difference between a tribe and a crowd. So if you think about it
from an offline perspective for a minute, because I think it makes it a lot easier to comprehend if you think about it from an offline perspective.
Yeah, okay. So a crowd would just be like, let's just say downtown New York City or something like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, there is a, you know, you can call them a group by the fact that they're all in downtown New York City, hustling and bustling here and there and everywhere.
And maybe even think about a concert, you know.
Yep.
Many, many years ago, I went to see Journey in concert, and I went to see the Eagles in concert. That's not a tribe. That's a crowd. It's
right.
A bunch of people who happen to be in the same place. And really, they're kind of there for the same purpose. They're watching that concert.
Right.
But short of that, they don't really have a lot of other things in common. They're just a bunch of people. That's it.
Absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, same thing if you think about a sporting event. If you think about a concert or, you know, a Sunday in the park or whatever, yes, there are people, they're all in the same thing. Or even if you just think about people, if you want to take it online, just because people are using Facebook, but there's the X number of millions of people or whatever, that doesn't mean that there's much gluing them together, except that they're in the same place, just like they could be at a concert or a ball game or whatever. And so that's
a crowd.
Think of a crowd. A crowd has no leader. And while they may have something that kind of gives them a reason to be in that place, there's really not a unifying purpose that really pulls them together for anything other than just that particular moment. You're there for a concert.
There's another distinction. There's lots of little conversations going on.
Right.
But there's no unifying conversation taking place.
Right. Everybody goes home after the ball game is over, and they may talk a little about the score or what stupid thing a player did or whatever. They may talk about how much they liked the game or didn't like this team or that team or whatever. But that's pretty much it. There's not something that really brings them together. And so that's a crowd, and there is no leadership in a crowd. And you think about a tribe, one of the biggest things that distinguishes a tribe, one of them, you know, more than one, but one is leadership.
Okay. So if we think about a tribe in the offline world, like the Cherokee tribe or the Seminole tribe, you do have at least one chief in there, and sometimes you have many chiefs and an even higher up chief, right?
There's often a chief and a council if you're talking about a tribe, a cultural tribe. And in terms of other arenas in offline, when you talk about or think about perhaps a movement or a political party, you have the Democrats, Republicans, or whatever political party you can pick anywhere in the world. The concept is the same. There's a political party. There is leadership there. It's not just among the leadership. It's not only that they are Republicans or Democrats or whatever they are, but there is definitely leadership. There is a certain reason that people come together. There is some kind of a unifying tie or belief or cause that brings them together.
Well, a unifying goal, I guess, would be a good way to say it.
Yeah, there's
a platform and a purpose.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, when you're at a concert, you've got the unifier of you're all there to watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
But you're there for different reasons. Watching the show, you're not necessarily all there for the same reason. I might go to a concert because I really like the music. Somebody else might go to the concert just because they want to hang out with the people that are going to be there. But we don't all go there for the same reason.
Right. And there's no common goal that's going to come out at the end of it. We're not there to cause something to happen. We're not there to cause a change.
Right.
We're not there to create something. We're not there to, you know, whatever it is, to try to influence people to vote a certain way, whatever. We're not there for anything other than being at a concert or a game or something. And I might be there because somebody bought me a ticket, and I don't really like the music that much, but, you know, they had the ticket, so I was there. You never know why somebody was there. There's no unifying purpose, really, in a crowd other than just the happenstance of whatever's going on at that moment.
Yeah.
Okay, so with the tribe, we have leadership. And we have a common goal and a common purpose where something is supposed to happen because of this coming together, other than just passively observing.
And we have a conversation taking place.
Yes.
That many, many, many people are taking part in all at the same time.
Yes.
There can, just like in a crowd, there can be separate little conversations taking part within the bigger conversation, But those are just asides. They're still part of the bigger conversation.
Absolutely.
And so how does this apply online, Ms. Rhonda?
Well, if it doesn't matter if your business is online or offline or both or, whatever, how it applies online is there are a lot of people who think that just by being a part of something like Twitter or Facebook and having an account, that makes you part of some kind of a meaningful tribe, some kind of a meaningful conversation going on, or that you're going to grow your business automatically just because you use the tool, because you're on Facebook along with millions of other people, or because you're on Twitter or whatever. That in and of itself does not necessarily mean that you are demonstrating any leadership whatsoever.
It just makes you part of the crowd.
Exactly. And that's why why I had wanted us to share some things about tribes and about leadership with people, because there's this piece of finding your expert voice and really stepping up as a leader in your niche where people are often holding themselves back from doing that.
Yeah.
And I've been reading the book Tribes by Seth Godin, and one of the things he talks about is why it is that people don't step up in leadership and in that tribal sense rather than just being one of the crowd.
Oh, what do you have to say about that? Because I haven't read the book.
It's actually very good. I have a lot of things underlined and starred and all kinds of good stuff in there. But what he says about why is it that people don't step up in leadership, and I was wondering that myself. Well, he says that it's because of fear of criticism. It's not even so much fear of failure, but it's fear of criticism, and no one has to have experienced any kind of criticism to feel that and hold themselves back.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness, I can't risk somebody just not agreeing with what I have to say. What if they don't like me?
Right. What if I offend somebody? What if I upset somebody? And people worry about that all the time. And every once in a while, someone will come up to me and go, so-and-so just thinks you're too direct. And I said, well, I'm not going to change who I am and how I operate. If they think I'm too direct, I'm obviously not the person for them. And they're like, oh, you're kidding. Well, no, what do you want me to do, be Gumby for everybody? I mean,
Here's the thing. You hear me talk about this all the time, and I referenced it back in the last radio show about being an expert and an influencer.
Mm-hmm.
Said that there's a very clear defining line on the fggg.com/blog that defining line occurred back in March or April of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd gotten into an argument about being a snob.
Uh-huh.
Prior to that time, I really believed, in my heart of hearts, I believed that you needed to be someone who really wasn't necessarily controversial. Someone that, for the most part, people really agreed with because
mm-hmm.
we're agreeing with them. And what I realized during that discussion about being a snob
mm-hmm.
and in the determination that what it takes is having an air of authority,
right.
What I realized was that also, by definition, means that from time to time, you necessarily need to be controversial.
Yep.
You don't want to be doing things in a way that everyone's going to agree with you all of the time.
Right.
If you are truly to be seen as an expert and an influencer, then by golly, it's important to have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
One thing or the other. You cannot be both things to both sides.
That's right.
So you have to be able to clearly state an opinion and stick to it.
Right.
That's what being an influencer is all about.
And be willing to state that opinion, not with the, I think that it's this way. You have to be able to say, boom, this is how it is.
Yes.
You just have to be willing to say that and willing whatever the consequence is. And frankly, if you're in business, you should polarize people. And frankly, when you do polarize people and get people, even if they disagree with you and they do it publicly, let it happen. It brings you more traffic.
Oh, big time.
Mm-hmm.
And many times that controversy really is something that does bring more traffic, more sales, more everything. Mm-hmm. Are you absolutely positively going to alienate some people?
Yep.
Absolutely. But that's a good thing, guys. Right. Not only do you want that, it's a good thing.
Yep.
Because those who really agree with you are going to be drawn to you in an even bigger, stronger way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it takes to truly create evangelists for your business.
Right. And that having evangelists is another thing that distinguishes the tribe from the crowd. It's another important distinction. But the thing is, the only way to have evangelists is if you, as the business owner, are willing to polarize, are willing to stand for whatever it is that you stand for, and whatever is not part of how you're going to do business, you have to be able to let that go. And Gina, you know, I was thinking about this, and another reason I really was into talking about tribes for us on this show today was I believe that there are too many people who do not spend enough time and energy into considering who their ideal customer is.
Oh, boy, Rhonda, do I agree with you on that one.
And here's what happens with regards to tribes. Okay, Gina, I'm just going to talk about it. And you, if you agree with me or not, just let me know. But here's what I say. Here's what happens. Somebody is new and they go, oh, well, my business could fit a lot of different people, so I don't really want to eliminate or exclude people, so I'm going to keep it as broad as possible. And, yeah, sure, I'm going to offer this kind of coaching or do that kind of business or whatever. But they say, I don't want to narrow it too much. And if I get too specific, then I'm not going to have enough customers. And so then they proceed from a sense of lack and fear of lack and fear of criticism and not wanting to polarize and not wanting to offend. And they don't spend enough time in nailing down exactly who is their audience. See, if I come up and I ask you, who is your ideal customer, you should be able to say, my ideal customer is blah, 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 within one or two sentences without hemming or hawing.
Very specifically, not just women.
Right, you can't just say women between the ages of 9 and 300.
Yeah. And you can't even say just women, all women, between the ages of 20 and 30.
Mm-hmm. No, you can't.
That isn't enough. It's just a crowd. It's not a tribe.
Right. There's nothing much unifying women of a 10-year age span just that by themselves, unless you're talking about soap, I guess, maybe. But, you know, you're not going to have a big tribe around soap, probably. And even that, there's going to be customization. Think about Ben and Jerry's ice cream, for example. The interesting thing about those two is that they took this concept of a gourmet ice cream, which is usually like, ooh, we're snobby, we're elite, we're select. And they made it like a movement, and they made it a community, the ice cream for the common person. And so they did their advertising and everything. It wasn't geared at the exclusivity snob type of crowd. It was geared at just the general person and the way that they named the ice creams, the way that they talked. It was dealing with a certain aspect.
And they have many tribes, each tribe being geared around an ice cream.
Exactly, and certain flavors and the ones that you like and whatever. People are very passionate and into the specific things around that. For your business, it has to be the same. And where I see people going wrong in a big way is in the aspect of figuring out who is your ideal customer. And I've really, especially coming from loving to write fiction, I think you should really do it just as if you were going to write a novel.
And, you know, I want to go back to Ben and Jerry's for a second because this is an important thing to mention.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the way that Ben and Jerry's started, they didn't start out with all the flavors that they have today.
Of course not.
They started out with a handful of flavors.
Mm-hmm.
A few audiences that they were going to target. And over time, as they got the formula right, as they figured out what magic they needed to cause in order to attract the right people, they expanded. And they didn't add 20 different flavors at one time.
Nope.
They'd add one
at a time.
And each time they'd get that one going, they'd go out and expand to yet another one. And it's the exact same thing you want to do in your business.
Right.
You want to get the formula right. figure out what magic needs to be there in order to really make it work to get the results you're looking for, and then expand out to another tribe. And those tribes are part of one tribe, but it's different crowds within a single tribe, I guess would be a good way to say it. Right, Rhonda?
Yeah, different sub-tribes, if you will, within that tribe. Because there's a certain, I mean, there's this larger tribe of people who like Ben and Jerry's, and then there's the flavors, and they did a number of things that are really ingenious that it's very good to do in your business. For one, they didn't start with a catalog of 26 different products.
Right.
I know some people who they want to wait till they have, and they put up a website, and they've never tested anything. And they go, well, I'm a speaker about blah, blah, blah. And they get a set of DVDs, a set of CDs, two or three different books, an e-book, and whatever and whatever. And they have like a thing of 26 different products, and they just puke it all down onto one page on their website. And they wonder why the stampede is not happening.
Where's the nails on a chalkboard?
Oh, that just makes me go, Ben and Jerry's, I think they had six flavors or something. It wasn't very many. I might be not right on the number.
I think it was five, actually.
Five, okay. Yeah, so they had a handful of flavors. And one other thing they did ingenious, besides that they started and they grew one at a time, which is always good, is that they had wonderful names and they did things that were unique. They put together unusual combinations. One of the things that makes people want to evangelize for you is we just brushed on that earlier, that evangelism component, which is part of what makes a tribe, is that you have some of these very unique aspects to your tribe, and you can talk about that and share that with people who are also part of the tribe, and it helps to bind you together. It makes people want to talk about you and evangelize whatever it is. So if it's the newest flavor or how unusual the combinations are or whatever, that gets people talking. And once it starts talking, it spreads, the idea spreads around, and the tribe is able to.
Oh, I just thought of the offline example that makes it easier to understand the tribes within the tribes.
Okay.
In American Indian culture,
right,
you have a nation, and the nation is comprised of many tribes.
Yes, uh-huh.
So, for example, we were recently up in Niagara Falls at the Seneca Niagara Casino.
Right.
And the Seneca is a nation.
Right.
Within the Seneca Nation, there are many different tribes. The Cherokees are part of the Seneca Nation. Honey, what were some of those other tribes within the Seneca Nation? The Mohawks were part of the Seneca Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And each tribe has their own evangelists. They have their own things going on. They have their own goals and their own platforms, but yet they're all a part of the bigger nation that also has a conversation and evangelists and their own platforms and their own goals.
Tribal council and all the rest of it, the same way. Look at what people often call the Sioux. You have the Lakota, the Dakota, the Nakota. They're all different tribes within the same nation. So there is a common conversation as well as what's happening in the subgroups.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that's the same kind of thing that happens within Ben and Jerry's.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have the whole Ben and Jerry's culture, and then you have the Chunky Monkey culture and the something Garcia.
Jerry's Garcia people, and yes, exactly.
Right. And whatnot. And they are the separate groups within the larger group. And Chubby Hubby, as Bill likes to say.
Chubby Hubby, okay.
And so how do we cause this in our businesses, Rhonda?
Well, causing this, the biggest thing is stepping up and being the leader.
It really is.
I'm sorry,
it
guys,
really
I got to tell you. Because you may not want to hear, you actually have to be willing to be a leader even before you really think that you have a tribe to lead.
Ooh, that's big.
Gina, that's big. That's like the biggest reason that I was thinking about this show and why I wanted just to do it with us. And, you know, we'll have other people on in the future and on it and stuff too. But, I mean, really the thing is that just like with a goal, Gina, you know that with going after a goal, you have to be willing to pay the price for success or for whatever you want in advance before whatever it is has shown up.
Absolutely.
The same exact principle applies to tribes. You have to be willing to be the leader, even when you're starting off on your little lonesome self and you've just put up your first blog post or you're still figuring out your, you know, whatever, and you're getting your business plan put together and you're knowing what your goals are and you're knowing where you're heading. You have to be willing at that moment in the beginning when nobody knows your name, when nobody knows who you are, to go ahead and step up in leadership and be willing to say, here's what I believe, here's how we're going to do this, here's the system that's going to make such and so easier.
And quite frequently, I have people who come to me and they'll say things like, well, you know, I don't want my name to show up on your social network, or I don't want my real name to show up on your forum. Well, you know, it's going to be really tough for you to be perceived as the leader if you're not even willing to let your name get out there.
Right.
You just can't do it.
Right.
If you aren't going to be the leader of this tribe, then who is?
Exactly. If you're going to be in business, you have to be willing to be the leader. And even within companies, and even within corporations and with non-entrepreneurial types of pursuits, what distinguishes people is leadership and what everybody really, people do want to be led. It's just a human fact. It's people want to be led. People will not admit it. They want to say that they're radical individualists or whatever, but really people do want to be led and they want things to be set out for them. They want everything to be understandable. They want someone to lead them. And so it's really important to be willing to step up in that role and say, okay, this is my market. This is my ideal customer. I don't have to worry about chasing this and that and the other thing and tail spinning around in circles because I know that this is who I'm here for. So that is one thing. It will actually make it easier and less agony to go through than what I see in a couple of the calls I was on recently with, along with some of your other students. I was just like, oh, step up, please. Get a spine and step up.
Yeah. And they, for the most part, they just aren't willing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to shake them and say, wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're willing to do it, go get a job.
Right.
Because you're not going to find the success that you're looking for until you are ready to do that.
Exactly.
If you're not thinking to yourself that you can ever get there, then go find a business partner who can be the base of the business, who
right.
can be the voice of the business, who can be the leader that you build the tribe around.
Right. Yeah.
They have mixed ethical thoughts about whether you can adequately do it by putting a fictitious character out there. I can give you plenty of examples of businesses that were able to do it with a fictitious character
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a real one. I think if you can do it with a fictitious character that's done in a way that doesn't mislead people, that doesn't make people feel as though that is a real human being leading them, that you can do it that way. But then it's going to mean you really need to create a fictional character that they feel is the leader to build the conversation around. I don't think you should be doing it where you come up with a name like Susie Q, who is supposedly a real person but is really fake. To me, that really is misleading people, and it's not the way to do it.
Right, and here's the other thing, Gina, is usually people who are all worried about not wanting their real name out there and stuff, there is a duplicity that will come across if they're making up a character.
Yes.
And I remember in high school acting class, Mrs. McGarry was quite a character, our instructor, one time said that there was a big difference between acting and acting as though. So,
ooh, that's interesting. There is, isn't there?
There really is, and it's so funny how that has stuck with me. And it stuck with me and translated it into writing, because I love fiction writing, and there's a real difference when you, in fiction writing, and there is an actual point to this, so just bear with me a minute, but in fiction writing, if you don't really get the character that you're writing, not only do they come across two-dimensional, but if you're just like trying to make it up just to fill, because you need this thing to happen at this time or this person to be in this place at this time or whatever, it totally reads as that there's a disconnect.
Little character that's first time home buyer or whatever. You don't really give them a name.
Mm-hmm.
You create something that is a cartoon that doesn't even feel real. You don't always talk in his voice. Sometimes there's other voices that creep in, and you can't quite tell who they are other than admin. And the message isn't congruent all the way through, so what do you do when you get to an email that you need to send out? Find that via admin or just leave a signature off?
Right.
It is going to create a disconnect in a way that will cause people to not feel like they're building a relationship with anyone.
Right.
They need to feel that the leader is present at all times and that they are building a relationship with that leader.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does. So what you're talking about really is authenticity, even if you're using a caricature or something of that nature, but there's still that you're still being real with people. You're not acting as though you're having a conversation. You're really having a conversation. You may choose to have a caricature or a pen name or whatever. And let's help people understand the difference between just kind of making something up and having a moniker in the way that I'm known as the Story Lady. And I just joked to my mom earlier, well, one reason is people can spell the Story Lady, whereas my name is hard to spell. But that is not just some fake name. I always introduce myself as Rhonda Calbaccio, the Story Lady. And people knew you as the JV Queen, but they would, you know, would also know your name. You weren't hiding behind anything. And the message is still very much authentic and very coherent and unified and easy to follow for people. So that's the difference between having a moniker where people will know you as that moniker, but you still have that clear and coherent message. Whereas if you're just simply trying to hide behind something because you don't want to be the one that's out there and you don't want to be the one that's real. That's a story. Oh, and you're going to laugh, Gina. I had somebody who asked how I figured out that they owned their website, and I said, you have a website and you thought you were hiding in private?
You're kidding, right?
I am not kidding. I'm like, hello, you have a website. Now, when did you think that you were a mystery owner? Because you have a website that's public. Well, I don't give the link out. Well, it doesn't matter if you give the link out or if you don't. You know?
Yeah, that makes no sense.
It makes no sense. But people do this, and why I thought of that is people do this all the time when they're trying to hide or not be the leader or, well, I just want to very quietly do my thing over here in the corner and so no one will notice.
You know, you can quietly do your thing in the corner over there. And what you're going to get as you're being quiet in the corner over there is exactly that. You in the corner over there.
No,
so don't expect to make any money from it because you are quietly in the corner all by yourself.
Right.
If you want people to open their wallets to share their money with you, then you need to either invite them into the corner with you or step out into the center of the room with them. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no other way to do it. You can't get the money from their wallets without interacting with them.
If you're not asking for wallet share, then you're not in business. That's what I call that, wallet share.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
So if you're not asking for wallet share, you're not in business. So if you just want to quietly go be in the corner and be the wallflower, that's great. Go ahead and get a job at your local discount store or whatever and forget having a business. To have a business, to be successful, to grow the kind of following where there are conversations going on, you do need to have that voice. And the conversations that happen in a tribe, Gina, also are important because they go in different directions. So one is from the leader to the people in the tribe. So if you're blogging or you're in a social community and you start to have a following and you're talking to your people, that's one kind of a direction. If they're replying, commenting on your wall, things like that, and you have a growing community, that's they're talking back to you. you also, there should be conversations among the people who are in the tribe, so it's not only between you and them or between them and you, but it's between the members and each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you will get more conversation to take place by being controversial than you will by asking them to take a part in the conversation.
Right.
I don't know why that's true. I can just tell you that it is. I used to beg people for comments on the FGGG blog.
Mm-hmm.
Beg them. The more I begged, the less they commented. When I finally put that post out there about being a snob and having the air of authority, I did not ask anyone to comment.
Mm-hmm.
Comments came pouring in.
That is,
because it's a controversial topic. And it has been that way ever since. If I ask people to comment, forget it. I can plan on getting none.
Mm-hmm.
The minute I stop asking and instead just start putting my opinions out there, that's the moment I'll get comments every time.
Right. Right. And just so we know, controversy doesn't necessarily mean you've got to be slamming another person. Controversy can just simply be boldly stating an opinion, and especially if that opinion seems to go against the grain or seems to be counterintuitive.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the things Seth Godin says in his book, Tribes, is this new rule. If you want to grow, you need to find customers who are willing to join you or believe in you or donate to you or support you. And guess what? The only customers willing to do that are looking for something new. The growth comes from change and light and noise.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not people looking for the same old answer.
Right.
It's people looking for a new twist to the old answer, maybe?
It's the same reason why Ben and Jerry's really wild names of flavors got so much attention.
Yep.
Because it was ice cream, and of course, you know, and people love ice cream, but it wasn't just ice cream. It was Chubby Hubby or whatever. It was something new. It had a cool, funky name, and it had these ingredients, combinations that you just didn't see everywhere. And in your business, it's the same type of thing. It doesn't matter if there are several people who talk about growing a business or several people who talk about writing a book. It's how you're doing it that's different, and it's going to attract interesting people and interesting conversation. It's that sense of newness and difference, because that's what catches people's attention. And you stop and think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because especially nowadays, there is just a lot of noise and hustle and bustle, and people are communicated at constantly between the computer and texting and the phones and the 5,000 applications and things at home and all of the things that are going on. The only way to catch somebody's attention is to stand out from the background noise. You cannot be the white noise of your industry.
No. You can, but you won't go anywhere if you are.
Right. Yeah, you can, sure. I mean, you can just be one of the crowd, and then in, you know, 5 years when you're still looking to make your first $100 or something, and that's where you'll be.
And this is where the topic of a blue ocean strategy really becomes helpful. Because even Ben and Jerry's, in a way, it was a form of a blue ocean strategy, right?
It really was, because, yeah, sure, they had ice cream, and there's a lot of ice cream. But what they did is, and it's even a lot of gourmet ice cream, and so instead of defining themselves as this exclusive, la-di-da, very snobby, like many of the other gourmet ice creams did, they branded themselves in a completely different direction. It's one of the more fascinating business stories. I really enjoy learning about different businesses, but that's one of them that really captures my interest. Just because of that, they took the what would normally be the exclusive gourmet ice cream, but they made it the ice cream of every man, of the average person, and gave it these interesting names and combinations and made it more accessible, so that then it actually ended up creating their own category in a way, because they were not doing exclusive ice cream. They were doing gourmet ice cream, but for the everyday person.
Okay.
That would be at least how I would define it. Gina, what about you? How would you talk about that?
Yeah, that's a very good way to define it. I like it that way. Very good. I guess it would be helpful for me to explain a little bit of the Blue Ocean strategy again now, even though we've talked about it in the past, for those who may not have heard those shows.
Right.
The Blue Ocean strategy is one where there's a book called The Blue Ocean Strategy. And what it talks about is markets that are either red oceans or blue oceans. A red ocean would be one like the internet marketing niche is today, where there's so much competition, the suppliers are now sharks. And these sharks are kind of going after a feeding frenzy that's causing the ocean to become red and bloody.
Mm-hmm.
As they're going after one another's throat, it's driving the prices down because that's the only way they have to compete, just on price. And the more the prices drop, the more the quality drops because they can't afford to continue giving quality with the prices that low. And before you know it, even the demand starts drying up simply because of all of that feeding frenzy that's going on. That's a red ocean market. They compare that red ocean to what they call a blue ocean market. A blue ocean market is one that doesn't exist today. It's created by finding another market that you can bring a value-added proposition into. So the example that they give repeatedly throughout the book is Cirque du Soleil.
Mm-hmm.
They explain that Cirque du Soleil was able to go into the theater-going market, find people that they were interested in doing business with, but instead of just going into the circus market, which was a really red ocean, circuses were closing down, they decided, well, let's go into a combination kind of a market. So they looked at bringing the value-added proposition of a theatrical performance into the product of circus,
mm-hmm.
and found a brand new market for themselves consisting of circus-going theater lovers. Cirque du Soleil wouldn't be the thing for somebody who only likes the circus but hates theater. They wouldn't like it.
Right.
For somebody who loves the theater but hates the circus, they wouldn't like it either.
Right.
But someone who's a circus-going theater lover, now they would love Cirque du Soleil. And they create this blue ocean that is a market that they completely and totally own, one that no one has been able to go in and touch at all. If you look at the Vegas Strip, they don't just have one Cirque du Soleil show playing. They are at 8 separate places all at the same time.
That's phenomenal to me. I can't imagine.
And it's the same thing that Ben and Jerry's did with ice cream. They looked at people who love ice cream and people who love some other something and put the two together.
Mm-hmm.
Value-added proposition of cherry flavors. So they took cherry lovers and turned them into cherry lovers who also love ice cream, and now we got Jerry Garcia tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with Chunky Monkey. Look at the ingredients and pull them into the ice cream, and now we've got that in a tribe. It's the same sort of thing you want to be thinking about doing in your business. Don't just go out and do the same thing that everybody else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Go out and find a way to do the same thing that other people are doing better by bringing a value-added something or another into the main product so that you can create a whole new market just for you that consists of that intersecting point between the two audiences. So that group of people that loves both things that are combined into one with what you're doing. It's kind of what I do with personal development and internet marketing.
Exactly.
So I don't go after just internet marketers. In fact, I don't even go after just marketers.
Right.
I go after business owners who are also interested in personal development and mindset. And if I don't have both, that's not the right candidate for me. And if I only go after one versus the other audience, it really limits my income. Because the people are probably only going to like a couple of my products, and they won't even like those very well. Because
mm-hmm.
all my products have both components. Everything I do has both components. It allows me to talk about different topics. It allows me to market to a different audience than what everybody else is going after, and there's very little competition. There are very few people that are doing those two in conjunction with one another
mm-hmm.
at the level that I am doing it.
Exactly.
No matter what niche you're in, you want to find a way to do the same thing. If you're in golf, what can you do as a value-added proposition and bring it into your golf products so that you can find a new subset of golfers that now become your target audience?
Right.
Could you find a way to take golf and use it to help people who are overcoming depression and thereby go after people who are depressed who are also golfers?
Mm-hmm.
Could you go after, let's see, what's a good example, Rhonda?
Well, you could go after golf and maybe pulling a strategy into it or something like that so that it gives a little bit of a different twist. I'm not really, I don't know very much about golf, but I mean, you think of ways that you can put a twist on something. And for example, just think about
the book and piece we talked about on one show, remember?
I'm sorry?
Golf and peace.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Golf and peace. Why not? Yeah. Golf with inner peace that comes from golf. You can pull in, you could even pull in if you had something around like golf and youth. My uncle, now that I think about it, taught his two kids golf when they were kids. And part of that was to teach them focus and concentration and yet to be do it in a relaxed way so that it wasn't a beat the clock. Because he is a very competitive person. He can be competitive about, I mean, drinking milk. It's just amazing. But he could teach them in golf. What they ended up learning was about planning and focus and yet doing it in a relaxed way. So, I mean, you can pull in all kinds of different things like that. And you think about all the interesting things that happen. Who's the guy that teaches chess to inner city youth?
Colin Hudson, I was just thinking of him as you were saying that. That's
right.
Too funny.
And yeah, that is funny. We're in sync. So that's another example where you think, okay, chess and the strategy and whatever that comes from that. Now you have these, in this case, you know, inner city youth who have a whole lot of issues and difficulties that they're facing on just this basic survival level. And by bringing chess to them, it brings them an ability to develop their mind, to develop a sense of order, of strategy and planning, and to realize that they can do something else other than simply live in the chaos that's surrounding them. They can plan for something else.
Great organization, besomeone.org. I plug them anytime I can. Besomeone.org.
Thank you.
Warren's doing some awesome stuff for any inner city youth.
Yep.
And he's actually expanding that to schools that are not just inner city now, because it's the game of chess and the strategies that come with it can apply to the game of life in any level.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you are in some, you know, highfalutin academy that's a private school, or whether you're in an inner city, you still need to have those same life lessons that you can learn through the game of chess.
Right.
Yeah, really good example, Linda.
And so anything that you do in your business, think about that. I mean, you know, even the people that that tend to teach storytelling do it very differently. Most people do it in more of the traditional way of maybe bringing in mythology or whatever, whereas I teach it more from a personal development and a sense of that core story, which is not a thing that I see people doing. And bring that into authoring and into growing a business. So there are ways to do that and just think creatively. What you personally bring to the table based on your passions and your abilities can really put a twist on something so that it does not have to be the same old thing. Because if it's the same old thing, it's not worth talking about, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Why would you talk about the same old vanilla ice cream like you've had for 55,000 years, you know, whatever? You would want to talk about something that's different. And
that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
It's by doing this, it's what triggers the conversations to take place that cause the crowd to become a tribe in the first place.
Exactly.
Without this element, the cloud never becomes a tribe.
Right. Right.
In the old e-commerce model that was popular when I got started online, where you'd put a whole bunch of products up on a web page and maybe you had a store that was, you know, all for different types of clocks. And you just had a storefront online that had all these clocks on one page. That would really attract crowds that would never become tribes. That worked when the internet first got started. It was a different internet than it is today.
And that in itself at the time was very unusual for you to be able to go to one place and compare 60 or 80 different clocks.
Mm-hmm.
That time was a big deal. Now, well, you can Google stuff and go to these review sites, and it's not a big deal. You just, whatever you're looking for, you can find it. It's very, very different. And so at that time, that was unique. Now it wouldn't be. And the rules do change, and it's all based on the communication, and it's all based on what's available to people as to what is worthy of being talked about.
And really, as it was from the evolution of that that we became this Web 2.0 world that we live in today. Mm-hmm. It may have started with that being unusual, but as that became more commonplace, people started looking for ways of bringing a value-added proposition into the e-commerce model. So it started with, okay, let's give people a way to rate the items that are in our store, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as they started putting ratings in there so that people could rate the 28 different clocks on that page, the next logical step in the evolution becomes, okay, well, now that guy's got ratings with his clocks. What can I do to make mine more different still? I know. I'll give my raters a chance to comment. And before you know it, you have full-blown conversations that are now tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Really came out of the process of bringing value-added propositions into things.
Mm-hmm.
That's Web 2.0 evolved. Web 3.0, when it evolves, is going to be something bigger still. And I believe it is going to be a true virtual reality world, much like Second Life or World of Warcraft or any of the other virtual reality worlds that are online today already.
Mm-hmm.
What it becomes from there, God only knows.
I have no idea, but just think about 30 years ago, we wouldn't have imagined the World Wide Web and all the things the way they are now, and YouTube,
no.
And Facebook, and Twitter. That stuff, we didn't even have the internet back then. We hardly had computers that weren't in homes at that point.
We didn't 30 years ago, did we? Oh, yeah, 30 years ago, 70s. That's when the computers first started coming out. I got my Tandy in 1974.
Yeah, it was say middle to late 70s. Some people started having them in their homes. Now they're just so common, and I just got one of those little netbooks, you know, that just amazing the things that change. But I mean, it's that type of thing. We don't know what it will be, but the tribe has a shared interest and it has a way of communication, and that communication between members of the tribe is what's very distinctive from the crowd.
Yes.
And
it's on purpose and not by accident. Whereas in a crowd, a conversation that takes place among the group is really by accident. It's not on purpose. There isn't anything there to facilitate the conversation. Whereas with the tribe, there is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Another thing that Seth Godin talked about in his book that I thought was really excellent is how can a tribal leader increase the effectiveness of their tribe?
Good question. What does Seth say?
Well, what Seth says is that there are three different ways, and two of them are vastly more effective than the other. So one way is by transforming that shared interest into a passion.
That's a really good one.
So now that's a good one. And now when we think about it, when we have something like, okay, people who are like medieval history or who like history and then become a part of the Society for Creative Anachronism, for example, who will buy garb and tents and all these things that are in the period of whatever their particular area is and tend to study the history and tend to get very irritated if you have a piece of some polyester or whatever in your clothing, which of course they would never have had, and it becomes not simply something that's different, but it is truly something that many people tend to become very passionate about. So it just takes that interest in history and knocks it up a few notches into a passion. And in your business, if you're not passionate about whatever it is, you're never going to be able to muster the energy to continue engaging people in different conversations and solving problems and so forth.
True. Very true.
Yeah.
So what are the other elements that he says that are needed to enhance the tribe?
Well, the passion is the first one, and then providing a way to tighten their communication or to improve their communication is the second. So now we've gone from, we don't just want a website with 800 clocks on it. We want to rate the clocks and rate, how was this vendor? Did he treat me well? Can I put up a review? Can I put up a video, an audio? Now we're having ways to communicate. And so do we have a website where there is a way to contact somebody? Do we have a network? Do we have places for people to get involved? So to tighten their communication among the members, we don't only want that communication with the leader, this one-way bullhorn effect, but we want a conversation. We want that two-way communication.
If you don't have a forum, adding a forum to your membership site so that they can communicate with one another.
Right.
Finding a way to allow them to communicate through their desktops instead of just online. Any of those kinds of things will help to improve the communication among them.
Right. And an offline example, and just to, is something that's kind of interesting, there is a little place down the road from me, and it's just called the Baxter Country Store, and of course there's a lot more tourist traffic, so one of the things they do during the off-season to keep the locals coming is that they have a potluck every month, and one of the things that happens at the potluck is people here are so spread out, and often we don't know very many of our neighbors because we're not jammed all up close together. And to come together every month, it gives you a way to communicate, to make perhaps some new friendships, and just to know who your neighbors are. It makes a sense of if somebody is in trouble or somebody has a common interest or whatever, you know that there's people that you can go to. And it improves the communication because they do this every month over the winter when there aren't as many tourists. So not only does it help their business, but it pulls the community together.
That's really good. Really good.
So to increase the effectiveness of the tribe, the first one we talked about was to turn the interest into a passion. The second one was to improve the communication, to tighten the communication. And the third one is just simply to leverage the tribe and make sure that it can grow. And here's a very interesting thing that he has this whole that goes all through the book in different places. A lot of people are going to think that bigger is better, and it's the same thing that causes people to make this huge mistake of thinking that they have to market to women or to men or to something really broad because they don't want to polarize and they don't want to have to choose and whatever, that actually increasing the size of those three is not the best one because bigger is not necessarily better.
Right.
20% of Canadians use Facebook, but that doesn't mean that 20% of those Canadians are coming together in any meaningful way just because a bunch of them are using Facebook. So just bigger is not necessarily better. And for your market, of course you want to have customers, but it doesn't mean that you have to be so broad and think you want to attract a huge crowd if you can be specialized and the only one doing something. It's not only the size that matters. It's really the quality of the communication and the quality of the relationships.
Well, it's what I call the money flow chart.
Yep.
So it has three components: the targetedness of the audience, the size of the audience, and the conversions. Increase any one of those three, and you're definitely going to increase sales. Simple algebraic formula, right?
Right.
A plus B plus C equals D.
Right.
And so what happens is if there's a couple of rules that apply. If you only increase the size of the audience, by necessity, the targetedness goes down.
Right.
And as that happens, you can't talk to people about anything in common because they don't have anything in common anymore, which results in the conversions going down. And the end result is not an increase in sales, even though you got more people. It's actually a decrease in sales.
Right.
The opposite is also true. When you increase only the targetedness of the audience by bringing people together who have some interest in common, who share some common problem, who have some common goal, although the size of the audience will typically go down, conversions go up so much at that point that you truly have an exponential growth in sales. And so that's what Seth's saying that, you know, just because you increase the targetedness doesn't mean that you increase the size. In fact, quite the opposite is true. Usually when you increase the targetedness, the size of the audience will go down, but that's a good thing.
Right.
It's not bad. It's a very, very good thing. Let's look at it this way. Would you rather talk to 100 people who are all clearly people interested in writing books, or would you rather talk to 10,000 people off the street?
I'd rather talk to the 100 who want to write books because that is what I offer. I'm not caring to talk about to the 10,000 or whatever that are just on the streets in general, because I have to do a lot of sifting and sorting. What I'm really looking for in the way I do business are the industry experts who need to write books. Why would I want to just talk to the people who are working at the local discount stores and working in restaurants? Because they're not my audience.
Be able to talk more people into writing a book if you were going after 10,000 people instead of 100?
No, necessarily.
Exactly. And that's the point. So the challenge is to find the people who are most interested in what you have to offer first.
Right.
So you don't have to go through all that sifting and sorting. That's the trickier part.
Mm-hmm.
You can start doing that by finding a crowd that does have some element in common.
Right.
That you can do. And then turn them into a tribe. You can also go and find a tribe that exists right now and see if there's a way that you can bring a value-added proposition into what you're doing so that that tribe will also be attracted to you as well.
A joint venture.
There you go. And that is indeed the power of joint ventures.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Positively.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, this whole thing, conversations and stories, and Seth Godin's very good about talking about the power of stories. One of the things he says that's really important is he was kind of comparing how marketing used to be done through advertising, and he says today marketing is about engaging with the tribe and delivering products and services with stories that spread.
Repeat that for me one more time, Rhonda. Marketing is about...
He says that today, marketing is about engaging with the tribe and delivering products and services through stories that spread. Stories that spread. So in other words, you think about, well, how are we going to get a tribe if we're just starting and we're trying to use our expert voice and be definitive and know our customer, our ideal customer, and all of that? Well, how is all of that going to translate into anybody paying attention to us? Well,
it's the story.
Stories that spread. Hello. It's the stories.
And now you understand why I was so interested in getting you involved in my world.
Oh, well, absolutely.
The person I talk to needs exactly what you offer as the story lady.
Absolutely. And the stories that spread. So think about, guys, for your business, anyone, you should be thinking about, what am I going to talk about that is spreadable? How am I going to get people to talk about me? How am I going to get more people to know about my products and services when I'm just starting out? Well, you're going to start having conversations with people. You're going to start finding the stories that spread. So there are a number of ways that you can do that, and a couple of...
I have to jump in, because there's something that I've implied in many conversations, but have never said in this way.
Mm-hmm.
You've often heard me tell the story of Joe.
Right.
Who's this guy who's really struggling, he's got this problem, it's the weight of Atlas on his shoulders, and pretty soon everybody's asking Joe what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Joe finds his solution, everybody starts noticing that he's smiling and happy-go-lucky, and everybody starts asking him about the solution, too.
Right. What happened? What changed? Yeah.
Right. That is what I say is viral marketing at its best. There are two ways to create a story that spreads.
Mm-hmm.
There is the let's make it up, you know, the things that you see Harris Spelman do with Sal,
yeah.
You know, or the mafia marketing techniques where you're talking about, okay, we're a mafia family and that kind of thing. Those are stories that by their nature are cutesy and funny, and they can go viral easier.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also the authentic story,
yes.
The Joes of this world, who aren't making up a story at all. They're just being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
You cause that kind of viral marketing by making a difference for somebody else first.
Right.
When you go out and intentionally make a difference in a big way for someone else, that becomes the story.
Right.
The success is the story that allows your message to spread and your tribe to spread. And you don't need to create those funny, cutesy, hypey stories, because that spreads even faster.
Right.
And that's why I talk about social entrepreneurship so much.
Exactly. And that's why when I teach storytelling, I'm not teaching you to make up a character or to come up with something fake or whatever. I'm teaching you to first know your own story and what caused you to do what it is that you're doing and what your goals are and who you're wanting to attract and all of that. And then you start telling the stories of and letting people tell their stories of how their life has changed because they've worked with you. That's what you're talking about, the authentic stories. And although I'm all for having fun and, you know, you remember the pirate game I've made up, so yes, those
well, things, I sure do.
I still want to do that, something like that. But anyway, those things are fun, and there's a place for that kind of made-up stuff. I love doing good theater sometimes. But how powerful the authentic stories. And it also gives you a great way to talk to your tribe that's growing. You think about things like the frequently asked questions, questions that you get all the time, and you can use stories of how somebody who had that question, you know, worked with you and got a solution. They're the questions that people should ask, or the situations people find themselves in because they take a wrong turn. And those kinds of stories, both the successes that people have and the troubles people put themselves in that they could have saved themselves if they've just listened to you, those become very powerful, and people will start to remember those and will come to you because they're seeing that you're a real person solving real problems.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is a lot of what I talked about back when I did the blog systems workshop last March-ish, I think.
Yep.
My whole blogging system is one that has the blog at the heart and soul of the business. And it's at the heart and soul of the business because it's the vehicle through which you tell the story of you. And the story of you is told in a way that allows other people to jump into a conversation so that they can tell their stories and other people can talk to you about yours and talk to them about them. And before you know it, the whole blogging system is causing this story to spread through a variety of different places with your blog as the center point of that traffic vortex or traffic whirlpool.
Mm-hmm.
That's all centered around these conversations. If you haven't seen the blog systems workshop, you can still get it, even though it's not live anymore. It's something that we recorded back in March. It's at www.askggg.com/blogging call. www.askggg.com/blogging call. And the whole system is one that's designed around tribes, just I don't call them tribes necessarily.
Right.
But that is very, very, very much what it is designed to do, is to help cause tribes to exist for your business and to help get conversations going within the tribe so that your audience will become product evangelists and evangelists for your business so that they will go and tell everybody that they know about you and what you do and how you make a difference for them and hopefully allow them to go and make a difference for others too.
Absolutely.
It's exactly why that bridge ratings study from back in 1997 that got repeated in 2007 shifted.
Yes.
It's all about this exact concept of tribes. It's what allows people in 2007 to no longer turn to religious leaders first and then teachers and then family, friends, and acquaintances, but instead to first seek out strangers with experience. And if you are the stranger with experience that they first find when they are looking to solve their problems, they are going to come in a way that will foster the tribes automatically.
Mm-hmm.
If you plant the seeds of your story into a crowd, that story will start spreading through the crowd to allow you to attract your own tribe.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Attracting your own tribe. I mean, there's an element of your leadership. There's an element of story. And one thing we really think about with tribes, it's not, the tribe doesn't grow because of the stuff that you offer. It's not because of the product or the book or the thing, but it's really because of the connection. So the tribe of people who love all things Harry Potter, for example, it's not, yes, it's not just the stuff, the books and whatever. It's because they want to be into that story and have a way to connect around it. People who are fans of a certain baseball team or have a club around that, anything. It's that not only that they have a passion for whatever, but they want to connect around it. And that's what causes there to be a tribe as opposed to, you know, to the crowd, and you're stepping up into that role.
Absolutely. Wow, this is a great call, Rhonda. I am so glad that you came up with this topic. It's certainly one that is absolutely essential for folks to understand if they're really going to grow their business. And yet, even those who are experts at tribes, and some of those include people like my good friend Dr. Ron Capps. Ron Capps has probably one of the strongest tribes, not necessarily the biggest, but the most evangelistic, I guess would be a good word, tribes that I know. His tribe members truly praise his stuff and who he is and what he does up and down and all the way around every single place you go. It's hard to run into someone who doesn't know of Ron and doesn't know about how great Ron is with social marketing.
Right.
But yet, even those people who do talk about tribes, they don't talk about tribes the way that we're talking about tribes today.
Right.
They talk about the tactical side of tribes.
Right.
How you create a tribe. And what we're really talking about today is what I would call the strategic side of building a tribe. It's the why you want to build a tribe, and how the tribe fits into the rest of the business and your products and what you do and how you do it.
Right.
It's stuff that if you understand what we've been talking about on today's show, will totally change your view of your business from this point forward.
Right.
It will change your role in your business. It will change the products you choose to sell in your business. Because if you're a leader of a tribe, you can't just go sell any old product.
That's right.
It doesn't work.
No, you have to think about your people and what they would need and what they would want. And when you realize that tribes are about connection, not about your stuff, not about your product, it's not about your service, it's about connection. It's about solving problems. It's about people being able to talk with each other, communicate with each other. When you realize that what you do is about connection and that's what makes you a tribal leader, when you can truly connect with people around creating a positive change in their life in a way that has the sense of newness and the sense of energy about it, that is going to make a huge impact. And that needs to take you out of worrying how many tweets of this type to that type and which networks and should you be in and should you do this tactic or that. You really, first of all, need to be very clear on the leadership role, on the story, on who it is that you're reaching as your ideal customer. And that makes
hopefully it helps folks better see that just having an account on Twitter or just having an account on Facebook is not something that's actually going to bring them sales.
Right.
And even going out and making a few tweets is not going to go and make them any closer to sales. It's really being that leader that's really got an opinion, that's really helping make a difference for people in a way that helps create their own stories that causes the sales to come in. And so it does matter who you connect with on Twitter and who you get to be friends with on Facebook. Because if you're not getting to be friends and getting followers who are truly going to be part of your tribe, then it's still not likely to turn into dollars in your pocket.
Exactly. Doesn't matter if you have 50,000 followers if none of them are paying attention or if none of them care at all about what you say and if you're not interacting with any of them. And it's even things like, do you remember when we were talking, and I'm not going to name names, but with somebody who was just starting to try to figure out how to reach out and sell on Twitter? And even just the way that she was saying things came across as being spammy as opposed to being what a difference that made when she had five tweets to different people. It all looked almost the same and really made her look like a bot instead of a person.
Yes.
And I, you know, went out and said, well, watch what I do. And I found a product and I connected with different people in ways. I ended up making a sale out of five tweets. One sale out of five tweets, and it was just because of the way I connected. And not saying, well, I'm aren't I something fascinating, but it's just that idea that you're connecting. It's not about the number, and it's not even about only that you have someone has this need and you throw a product under their nose. It's just how it's done, and are you connecting as a leader? Are you connecting as somebody who cares? Are you really connecting, or are you just trying to shove your stuff under their nose?
Big difference between the two. Gigantic difference between the two, right?
When you get that a tribe isn't about your stuff, it's about connection, that will change how you communicate with people, even on 140 characters of Twitter, which is why I used that particular example.
Absolutely. And, you know, this show, more than any other call I've ever done, and I'm really serious, not just on this radio show, but any other call I have ever done. This one call has pulled together almost every single concept anyone has ever heard me talk about.
Mm-hmm.
From the audiences and how to target your audiences, to what you do with traffic, to what you do with your blog, to what you do with joint ventures. Without this one call, none of the rest of it matters.
That's right, because we've even touched on how you figure out your, how figuring out your ideal customer changes that. We've talked about connection versus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about creating products, building communication systems, being the leader.
For those of you listening to this call who also have some of my other courses and my other products, I want you to go back and listen to this recording one more time. And then go back through my other products and see what a difference it makes. Because I promise you, you will never again listen in the same way to anything else that you hear me talking about after listening to the show.
Yep. This call should be a product.
This call should really be a product one, and I really think we are going to turn this into a product. This was a phenomenal, phenomenal topic for us to cover.
Yep.
Is there anything else that Seth covers in the book that you think is really important for us to talk about here today?
Yes. The anatomy of a movement.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this one.
He has the anatomy of a movement in three steps, but here's why this is important for our listeners to understand. You, and this could be, if it's whether you're doing social entrepreneurship or growing your business, what you really want to happen, and when you really look at the people who make it big and make it successful, it's because what they do, and the ones that last, I'm not talking about the flash in the pan little characters that come and go and all that, the ones that really stay, it's because they basically have created a movement that it's not just a one-time flash in the pan. They're not a one-hit wonder.
Mike Phil Salmon Butterfly Marketing here, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that is a movement.
Right. The movement is something that lasts, that people talk about, that person builds their reputation for years to come. That's why you want to move toward having a movement, creating a movement. That over time, it doesn't happen in a day, but you know when you're creating a movement that people are going to be talking about things. Yes, Mike Phil Same, Butterfly Marketing. Mark Joyner, Integration Marketing.
Mm. Good example.
Okay, that's another one. I have to tell Mark I just read his name.
Heads to you, but Think and Grow Rich.
Yep, Think and Grow, absolutely. Yes, and even going back, all kinds of different things. Now, those are movements. Here is the anatomy of a movement according to Seth Godin in Tribes, and it's really important. Number one, a narrative that tells a story about who we are and the future we're trying to build. I would add the word together at the end of that sentence if it were me.
Read that one more time.
Okay. A narrative that tells a story about who we are and the future we're trying to build.
Okay.
Okay, so number one is the narrative. Number two, a connection between and among the leader and the tribe.
Mm.
A connection between and among the leader and the tribe. Number three is something to do. The fewer limits, the better. Something to do. The fewer limits, the better. So his anatomy of a movement is a strong narrative, a strong connection, and no limits movement.
So if you look at Mike Salsame and Butterfly Marketing, the narrative is the story of a butterfly's flapping wings.
Yes.
And how flapping your wings is going to, you know, create that one tiny ripple that can affect the air on the entire planet.
Exactly.
That sense of connection was created through all of the contests that Mike did in the forum when he launched Butterfly Marketing, and that forum is still going strong today.
Mm-hmm.
And there were contests for affiliates so that the affiliates started talking and having a conversation about the butterfly flapping its wings. And connections were made between the customers and the forum and whatnot. And in terms of the last element, well, you could apply this in any way to meet any business with any market, with any product. There were no limits to how you could apply this other than you had one way to flap your wings within your business. That might mean giving away a membership site. That might mean giving away an info product, an ebook, a video. It's just the concept of giving something away free. But by giving it away free, the essential difference is the people who get it for free have to become affiliates. Otherwise, it wouldn't be part of Butterfly Marketing. And in making that giveaway happen, you have to be bringing those new affiliates into a membership site, not just to a download page.
Right.
And it's that unique combination of elements that you can then apply without limits. And there you go, a successful movement.
Exactly. Exactly. And that is really important. And it, of course, it didn't happen in one day or one minute or even one year, right? That whole
yep.
thing has been around for a while. But you have to know and understand that Mike Filsaime planned all of that in advance. It's not just like he pantsed the seat of his pants all the way through and go, oh, look what happened. He planned it strategically, which is exactly why you need to plan your business in a strategic manner. And
in fact, for almost 11 months prior to the launch of the product that we today call Butterfly Marketing, every single move that Mike made was highly calculated and all designed around getting people to that moment in time when the Butterfly Marketing product came out.
Right.
Speaking engagements were selected around it. Info products were created around it. Promotions were built around everything about it was done because of the lead up for almost 11 months. Oh, Rhonda, that was awesome. And really, you can create a movement for pretty much any business.
Yep. Absolutely.
And this is why just selling stuff just doesn't work in a Web 2.0 world.
Nope, because people just see that you're just trying to make a buck.
Yep.
Or a rupee, or a whatever, euro, whatever your currency is. You're
yep.
just trying to make currency. And they yep. know it because they can see it everywhere because of how you interact.
They can feel it.
And they feel it.
They can feel it. Oh, Wanda. That is just fabulous. I can't thank you enough for bringing this topic up. I think we only have about 1 or 2 minutes left. What else do you want to mention to wrap things up today?
Just let's just give a kind of a quick recap so that people realize how you can apply this. So what we've talked about on the call, that what distinguishes the crowd and the tribe is that you have a common interest, you have ways to communicate, you to be the leader is another thing. We have talked about that the most important thing really is that you have the passion, you have the connection. Those things will grow the size, but that a tribe isn't only about bigger is better. A tribe is about more connected is better, more communication is better, and that this communication has to be done in a way that is new and different and attention-getting because people have to spread the story. And that is why your narrative, your core story of you is so important because the narrative that you have for you and for your business has to be strong enough to carry the narrative into the tribe to become something that people want to connect around and talk about.
Absolutely.
It's about the connection.
Absolutely. And then one last element was the movement.
Yep. The element of the movement, having a strong narrative, having a connection, getting that conversation going so that people are wanting to talk about it and wanting to spread the message. And that really important part, the last one, was creating something to do with the fewest possible limits so that people can be a part of that conversation and that connection.
Wow. And like I said, this is what the Blogging Systems Workshop really does. It helps you to do all of that. If you're interested, www.askggg.com/blogging call. www.askggg.com/blogging call, BLOGGINGCALL. It will help you to create a system that will create tribes for your business. But it all starts with really seeing yourself as the expert that you are and choose your niche based on your expertise. So that you really are going out there and becoming that stranger with experience that people will like, know, and trust. so that they really will be interested in what you have to offer. Oh, Rhonda, I can't thank you enough for doing this as a topic today. This was just an awesome, awesome, awesome show.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I look forward to being back next week. Who do we have next week on board, Rhonda?
We have Laurel Clark from the School of Metaphysics, who has fabulous books and teachings about the law of attraction and applying it to your life through the power of vision.
Oh, gonna be an awesome call. I know of her, don't know her personally, can't wait to meet her. And just give them a taste of a few other upcoming guests in the month of November.
Okay, well, we have the Twitter Watchdogs. Alan Skeeter will be with us a little bit later in the month, and we're going to finish off the month of November with Jim and Judy, who wrote The Heart of Marketing. They are best-selling authors. They have four different books, and they have the Soft Selling Association. I'm really excited to meet them, and, oh, it's just going to be a fabulous month.
Oh, I can't wait. Well, thank you so much, Rhonda. Thank you all for being here. And we'll be back next Tuesday at noon Eastern here on Blog Talk Radio with another awesome show, great guest. And I will be calling next week from Tunica, Mississippi, from Samstown Hotel and Casino's campground. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Getting ready to head out west with my in-laws for a three-week road trip en route to Vegas, so it should be a fun trip, and we'll come to you live from the air on the trip and upload some pictures to www.askjujuju.com/wheresGina. Check it out this week while I'm at the Sang 3 event, and go see all those pictures of me at my castle. See you next week, Rhonda. Take care, everybody. Thanks, Rhonda.
Bye.
Well done.